Welcome to the Africa Health Tech Podcast, where we explore the exciting intersection between artificial intelligence, or AI, and healthcare in Africa. I am your host, Kelly Chibale. I'm a professor of organic chemistry at the University of Cape Town, where I hold the Neville Isdale Chair in African-Centric Drug Discovery and Development, where I'm also the director of the UCT Holistic Drug Discovery and Development Center, also known as H3D. Please join me as I speak to some of Africa's most eminent and pioneering scientists as we explore how technologies like AI can be brought to bear as we tackle some of the most significant, most pressing health challenges on our continent. Hello, listeners. Welcome to this episode. I have just had a fascinating conversation with Professor Rose Leck on the potential of artificial intelligence, or AI, in terms of really helping us leapfrog progress in the field of malaria.
There's this thing like we've learned to live with malaria. People have to have a complete change in mindset that says we can get rid of it.
Professor Leck is a distinguished figure in the field of immunology and parasitology. She holds prestigious positions in various scientific organizations and institutions. She has received numerous awards and recognitions, including being honored as the Queen Mother of the Cameroonian medical community in 2018. She is, yes, the Queen Mother of the Cameroonian medical community. It's a real pleasure and honor to welcome Professor Leck. Today's episode of this podcast, we're going to focus on how artificial intelligence, or AI as it is popularly known, how it is revolutionizing healthcare in Africa. So, without further ado, over to you, Rose.
Thank you very much, Kelly. Wow, for that very eloquent introduction. So, let me tell you a little bit about me and malaria. I grew up as a child who had bouts of malaria. And I remember my mother putting me over a very boiling pot of hot water and different leaves, covering with a blanket. And that made me feel better, and then drink and bathe with that liquid after. That happened so many times. And, you know, the curiosity there to know what was really happening took me then, at least, to get on and be involved in malaria research. We all know that, you know, this is one disease that you can prevent and you can treat, but we have it. Progress, as you know yourself, has stalled. We thought we were doing very well. I was on all these working groups, as you said, we're moving on, malaria elimination and so on, the global malaria program. And then all of a sudden, we've seen, as you know from the World Malaria Report, progress has stalled.
And indeed, Rose is correct. Since 2015, progress in the fight against malaria in Africa has stalled. And the reasons are complex. Firstly, in Africa, more people live in high-risk malaria areas. And as Rose will tell us, funding has plateaued, and we are seeing increased resistance to insecticides and malaria drugs as well. Furthermore, the pandemic, the COVID-19 pandemic, and the climate change have exacerbated the problem even further, with 2022, the year 2022, seeing an estimated 233 million cases of infection on the African continent. And this is an increase of roughly 15 million compared with pre-pandemic times. And unfortunately, this disease is predominantly an African problem. Every year, Africa accounts for a staggering 95% of the world's total malaria deaths.
So what do we do? We try to go into rethinking malaria with Harvard University, bringing stakeholders together, even the people in the front line. You know, what can we do differently? What will be the game changers that will really help us see some kind of improvement in what we're seeing all this stalling? One method, though, that I think has really seen progress as I look at it, is SMC, seasonal malaria chemoprophylaxis, being given to children on that belt where you have seasonal malaria in Africa. And I think that has gone on very well. You know, what we need in our regions now is the need for enhanced clinical surveillance. We need genomic surveillance. But when you talk of genomic surveillance in this part of, you know, the world, you know, the equipment, the skilled personnel, you know, we really lack them. And what do we do? Before we used to talk, there's a book even that was written. It said, waiting for the vaccine. Waiting for the vaccine, for the malaria vaccine. And yes, now we have the malaria vaccine. We had one, the RTS 2021. And now we have the R21. And these two vaccines, you know, it was going to come up maybe to fill in that gap for a while that we've been needing. You know, we talk about the tools. We need more tools. We need more tools. There's one tool. But what we have to emphasize is the vaccines have to be used in conjunction with the other tools. And what I mentioned before, if you use the vaccines now, at least has been shown in Mali and so on, with SMC, you know, you really get a synergistic reaction there. You know, you get a higher coverage efficacy of the vaccine. So there is some hope here. With the vaccines that we had, it was first of limited quantities. And at that time, we could only get about 2 million doses for all of Africa. But now, for the R21, we're certain now we've been assured of about 200 million doses for Africa.
When one looks back at some of the reasons as to why progress in malaria has stalled after making some really incredible progress. You know, I remember once upon a time, you know, we used to have almost a million deaths, you know, from malaria. And I think we managed to have that to somewhere around, you know, half a million or so. But then we saw what happened during the COVID pandemic, where, as you were referring to earlier, you know, the latest World Malaria Report, we saw an increase again in the number of malaria cases and incidents. So I guess what I'm really getting at is to get a sense from you, what do you think some of the reasons why progress in malaria has stalled after this wonderful progress that we made over the last decade or so?
Funding has been a big problem with malaria, to be able to get to where funding. COVID did its own, but funding, that's the way they're asking again for, you know, more investments to be made. And then innovations. And that's why I believe that, like, innovations with what you will have with AI, I want to hear today, those innovations that we need kind of to bring up, you know, what else are the game changers that we need here? There's prevention, right? We said, right? So you can have vector control methods, which we all know. You know, you have the long-lasting insecticide-treated nets that they're being used. And people in the beginning, it was like, this is it. This will help us. Let's think about the use, Kelly. How many people are now using the L Alliance? is being distributed, but the use is not optimal. It's not what it should be. Because it really, those vector control methods, such one was used in the studies that were done to bring the airlines in. It was shown in Whitview covered the whole village. I mean, malaria was really gone. But this hasn't happened. Using with that, you know, vector control method. These are the tools we've had. It's been the vector control methods as such. If you take IRS, very expensive. How many countries can afford it?
I just want to pause here quickly so I can expand on these vector control methods that Rose is referring to. Firstly, it's important to understand that the vector we speak of in terms of malaria is the Anopheles mosquito, the female Anopheles mosquito, which carries the malaria parasite. Simply put, vector control refers to controlling the numbers of malaria-carrying mosquitoes, either through chemical or non-chemical means. Rose mentions two chemical means. The first is what we call IRS, or indoor residue spraying, which involves chemical sprays to kill adult mosquitoes in the house. But as she also rightly points out, it's expensive. Indoor residue spraying is expensive. The other method we talk about is what we call long-lasting insecticide nets. These nets are supposed to be hung over one's bed to prevent bites, but the use is not optimal. And often people use it for other purposes, including fishing and protecting seeds and crops from insects, which of course is not advisable. But of course, this is a real challenge that we face in this area. But there is something deeper we need to address. What then lies at the heart of the problem?
There's this thing like we've learned to live with malaria. People have to have a complete change in mindset that says we can get rid of it. That's what I don't see really coming from where I come from. I have malaria, I go to the hospital, and I'll be treated. And, you know, I'll feel okay. I don't go. Maybe I just buy a drug. Buy the drugstore, I take it, I'll feel okay. There's this thing like we've learned to live with malaria. To be able to convince, I think that's one thing we have to do, to convince the people that you don't have to live with it at all times. You can eliminate it from the world. That people have that kind of, that message starts going into the communities. I think that would also help.
I think the example that you've given, and I think this last message about change in mindset, you know, it's like when I was growing up in Zambia as a little boy, you know, just to share, you shared your wonderful story of, you know, how your mother used to treat you with those concoctions. But I remember growing up in Zambia, in the townships in Zambia, and I remember getting very, very sick as a young boy and going to a health facility, getting malaria medications and getting cured. But what I didn't realize at that time, which is I think is important for our communities to understand and appreciate, is first of all, only much later in life did I realize that that medicine that cured me, that if it wasn't there, I would have died. But I realized two things after that. Firstly, that someone somewhere invested in the research and development to discover that medicine that cured me. Secondly, that someone somewhere volunteered to participate in the clinical trial for that medicine to be tested on them for my benefit. So I think that, you know, it would require communities in Africa to participate in this research and development, including participating in clinical trials, because that is for our own benefit. You know, if you look at our continent today, you know, we currently make up 15% of the world's population, but we are responsible for 20% of the disease burden. And yet, we have such a low volume of clinical trials. I mean, I think we're sitting at between 3 and 5% of the trials that participate in Africa.
So true.
Which means, by implications, you know, these vaccines or the therapeutics that we talk about, they have been developed and optimized in the developed world where, you know, people participate in these trials. And then, you know, typically 5 to 10 years later, those therapies are brought into Africa. So the way we practice medicine in Africa, you know, needs to be factored into, you know, the way that we develop medicines, and Africans participating in the research and development is very important. It's for our own benefit. Yeah.
So true.
Let me come to AI now. Of course, this is a technology, artificial intelligence. And when we talk about artificial intelligence, where is it mostly relevant? In other words, how can this technology, very powerful technology, can help us leapfrog our progress to do things much faster and much more efficient? But I want to take a step backwards before I talk about, you know, just how we are using AI in our malaria drug discovery programs to accelerate the process, and how we are working to improve treatment outcomes in people of African heritage. There are three things that really underpin artificial intelligence. Firstly, power, access to electricity, reliable and affordable electricity. We cannot take that for granted, because 50% of Africans don't really have access to affordable, reliable electricity. Because when it comes to artificial intelligence, you know, you are running very sophisticated, complex models with very rich data sets that require you to have access to affordable electricity easily. First point, access to power. The second thing that underpins AI is connectivity. Mm. You know, I think only about 36 or so percent of Africans are well connected to the internet. You know, this
is it that high?
Well, it's actually 36. That's still very low. So we need this digital infrastructure and access to this infrastructure. And then, thirdly and finally, AI, machine learning, is about data, granular data. We are poor in data at this point in time. Because that's what you need. You need to collect data. You need to digitize the health system so that we can access electronic health records. That's a kind of data that we need to collect, working with communities, as you were talking about earlier, so that they can understand the importance of sharing data for our benefit. Now, we can complain about not having access to power, not having access to connectivity and data. But what can we do with what we have right now without wishing we had everything? And that's the example I'm going to share with you now. So, two examples of how we are using AI in speeding up the process of discovering new drugs for malaria, but also being mindful of the resource constraints that we have over here. So one thing that we've done, you know, over the last 13 years of the existence of our drug discovery center, H3D, we have been collecting a lot of data in not just in malaria, but also in TB and other areas that where we work in, different data on different tests and assays that we conduct. We then partnered with an organization called Acelia Open Source Initiative, which is really focused on developing open source AI tools and models that could be deployed in resource-constrained settings so that, you know, it doesn't require that very sophisticated computational power that you need to do these high-level things. So what we have done with Acelia is develop a tool called Zyrachem, which is basically a tool, an artificial intelligence tool, that allows us to work with all sorts of data that we've generated. And this has allowed us, with very low computational resources, to develop AI models that we are now deploying in our discovery programs to bring significant efficiency to the way that we do things. The second example and final example I'd like to give you is a project that we are doing, which is really focused on how can we tailor dosages for malaria drugs, for example. You know, as I mentioned earlier, you know, we haven't had a long history of Africans participating in clinical trials. It's a very low volume of clinical trials. So this particular project is really focused on using AI to identify genetic variants that are prevalent in Africa that are likely to affect the metabolism of malaria and TB drugs. And so we are using AI to identify those genetic variants and then use them to refine existing models that are used to predict what the dose needs to be in people before you start doing the clinical trials. So what we've done, we had very limited data available to us, but we used a technique we call transfer learning from other areas, mostly from the cancer field, and then use that those learnings and then work with these very small data sets that we have in Africa to identify these mutants so that we can then develop tools that we can deploy in coming up with much more tailored dosages for the African patient population. Now, you may be asking how these artificial intelligence tools we are working on are relevant in the case of malaria prevention, malaria control, malaria treatment. So, firstly, AI can be used to predict the efficacy and safety or toxicity of potential malaria drugs. So that's the first application of how AI could be used in drug discovery and development. The second application of AI is in understanding how malaria drugs work. How do they kill the parasite? And this application is really underpinned by the ability of AI to recognize images. So when we treat malaria parasites or cells that are infected with malaria parasite, we treat them with malaria drugs, we can image that cell. And that is the power of AI. When we image that cell, we can train the computers here, or machine learning as we call it, to then be able to recognize molecules that give that kind of signature. And therefore, we can then determine how those molecules work. The second application where AI really has the potential to help us with malaria medicines is in the area of manufacturing. We can use AI to optimize manufacturing processes. We can use AI to boost the yield or the production of these malaria drugs, which can then really help us reduce the costs of the malaria medicine, which of course then impacts on affordability and access to these medicines. The final application of AI, in fact, is a very good example of what we're currently doing in malaria, which is to use AI to tailor drugs for specific African patient populations. You might be wondering why this is important when many malaria medicines have been discovered and developed and deployed amongst different African patient populations. Well, first of all, I need to just take a step backwards and just remind you, my audience, firstly, that the African population has greater genetic variation relative to other populations worldwide. In other words, the African continent is the most genetically diverse continent on planet Earth. That's something that we keep in mind. Now, why is that important? The implications of not factoring in the genetic differences is that this has implications, firstly, on the exposure levels of the malaria drugs in the person. Secondly, it has implications on the response to these medicines for malaria, as well as side effects that may happen as a consequence of overdosing, for example. This can fuel the emergence of drug resistance, which really has the potential to render malaria drugs useless and malaria impossible to treat in many parts of the world. So, therefore, with that background and context, there is an urgent need for us to understand the metabolism and disposition of drugs that are given to African patient populations so that we can optimize the dosages and also minimize adverse effects or side effects profile. And so this is very important that when we identify these genetic variants that are prevalent in different regions of Africa. Remember, Africa is not a country, it's not homogeneous, it is very heterogeneous. And the genetic variants that you can find in different parts of Africa are different. So we need to think about how we can optimize those medicines. So that is actually what we're doing in our center, H3D, in collaboration with ACELIA Open Source Initiative.
Interesting. Thank you so much. I've learned a lot this morning. And I know that in the area of drug discovery, when it comes to that, and with you and AI, when they're talking about artemisinin resistance, I should not kind of really go into denial, but just have some kind of hope that, you know, Kelly is there and I will rely on him and all that he does to help the continent as he's been doing. Thank you, Kelly.
Thank you so much, Rose. It's been a tremendous honor and privilege to speak with you. And of course, I've learned so much as well from you. So really just remains for me to thank you so much, Rose, for your time. And of course, for all the significant contributions that you've been making to the field of malaria, inspiring girls and women to get into science. We need to have more women and girls following you as an example. And so thank you so much for the inspiration that you provide to all of us. And of course, to all the listeners, it's been a real pleasure being with you. I hope that you enjoyed listening to the Queen Mother of the Cameroonian medical community in Professor Rose Leck. Thank you so much for your time, and thank you for listening to this podcast. I am your host, Kelly Chibale, and this is the Africa Health Tech Podcast. This podcast is produced by Telltale Media in collaboration with the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, Global Health Strategies, and the University of Cape Town Holistic Drug Discovery and Development Center, also known as H3D. If you would like to be notified when the next episode is released, please hit the subscribe button on Spotify or wherever you are listening to this podcast. Until then, stay healthy, stay happy. Bye for now.